This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. And my other the co-host with me today, as always, as almost always, unless we're doing one of those preview shows, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals sites from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything on your end? The podcast these days with college football in full force right now.
It's good. There's a lot of bad players right now in college football, or just not playing well, or up to expectation, and changed.
The quarterback class doesn't look good.
Yeah, and we even hit on a little bit at home. Jaden Daniels, you know, not really taking that next step this year as expected as a player. He's unleashed himself as a runner more, but he's, you know, I don't want to say taking a step back, but just not playing quite as well as expected as a passer this year. A lot of that probably has to do with the fact that they're very young at the receiver position. But yeah, so it's really interesting. College football is kind of a mess right now. I think it's obvious that Bama and Georgia are the two best teams in the country, right? And,
yeah.
And you're just kind of going to wait and see if they just play twice to see who's national champ at this point.
Absolutely. But on the Cardinals end of things, and this is episode 326 of the show, we have a 3-0 Cardinals team after what looked like a bit of a scare against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then they took care of business in the second half and picked up, you know, ultimately, you know, a 12-point win, 31-19 win was kind of what we both expected the end to be. It's just how they got there was not what we expected. So coming up in this show, what we're going to talk about is, well, how do we feel after that Cardinals win? Do we think it was a good win? We're going to talk about some of the good things. We're talking about Kyler Murray, the receivers. We'll look back at that faded field goal attempt at the end of the first half. We'll discuss injuries and concerns and some roster moves that are being reported that, well, honestly, by the time this show drops, you will know what the actual deal is. And then we'll look ahead to their week 4 matchup, which is the the big matchup of the week and of the year thus far on the road against the LA Rams. So let's get started with talking about the Cardinals win. To you, Seth, well, first off, do you consider it a good win, considering basically it was a team that is winless, that has a lot of things not going well for them so far? Do you consider the win a good win because the way they won it?
Yeah, I think they came back and showed what we were wanting to see. It just went kind of the opposite way we wanted, and you know, we wanted to see them play that dominant role in the first half. Instead, they had some, you know, hiccups and missed opportunities. When you look at it from that perspective, you know, it makes it easy to say, well, it wasn't a good win. But the reality was, if they had gotten out to a 28, you know, or 24-0 lead and then tacked on one late, and law, you know, and won 24-7, and then ended up winning, you know, 31-19 like they did, I don't think anybody says two words. But I think it's the way that they kind of went backwards in the domination that people are, well, they started slow and you can't do that against good teams. And you know what? You're right. You can't. But overall, I think, you know, the outcome was what we wanted. And I thought that they played, well at times. There were some obvious issues that we'll discuss as we get to that. But, you know, for now, I think you have to be excited that this is a team that did what we wanted to see. And that was you know, really dominate a half of football against a bad team, and they did that just like we said in the second half instead of the first.
Right. When we were in the middle of the game, we're kind of like, what the heck are they doing? They didn't start out as well as you'd hoped they would have. Then you've got the end of the half play, but ultimately you get to the end of the game. You have an offense that put up over 400 yards. They scored. Now, granted, the offense didn't score 30 points, but they put together 31 points. The defense wasn't as good, but they were great on third down. They created turnovers. They scored on defense. So if you look on the whole, it was what you wanted. However, it didn't feel like a dominating performance because they had to come back. And as I look back on the game, honestly, you know, really it was two bad things. One was the kick six when they go for the 68-yard field goal and Jamal Agnew brings it back for the touchdown that gives them the lead at halftime. And then it is the first possession for that Jacksonville has in the second half where they just like run, eight plays, eight runs, and a touchdown where that puts them up 19-10. You look at the rest of that. So you look on the whole of the game, the Cardinals pretty much controlled the game throughout. You didn't like the fact that they allowed the Jaguars to score in the last 2 minutes of the first half. And obviously the kick six was heartbreaking. But you come down to it, really all it was the kick six and one drive where it looked like the Cardinals were overmatched. And then the rest of the game, it was the Cardinals weren't in any real danger, which after you look at it, you're like, oh, that's what you expect. You look at the score 31-19, you feel that's exactly, I'll tell you, I predicted a 31-20 win. It's just how it got there was different. And because there was adversity in the middle of the game, it felt like, this is going to be those Cardinals again, and this is the type of game that they would have lost. And Kyler Murray said it, probably the last couple of years, they would have lost that game because they were not good at overcoming mistakes. And whether the kick six you could consider a mistake, then Kyler Murray for the third week in a row throws a interception on the first drive of the second half. It's probably something you gotta stop doing. But they come back and win it. They didn't have their Detroit loss like they did last year or their New England loss. And so ultimately, now for the third week in a row, or the second week in a row, they come away with a win in a game that they didn't play perfectly. Because honestly, week one was a perfect game plan. Everything worked out perfectly. Week two and week three were uglier. But that's how most football games tend to go. We don't feel like it looks like the Cardinals are a good team, but we don't feel 100% sure yet.
Well, and I think there are some, you know, obvious things that you take away from it. I think, you know, the first thing that you look at is they had some struggles in places that you weren't expecting. Again, the pass rush. Now, we talked about this on the show. And you know, if people listen to this show, which let's be honest, a lot of you do, you heard us talk about that Trevor Lawrence had only been sacked twice this year. Like, a lot of things are wrong with Jacksonville, but their offensive line has protected their franchise quarterback fairly well so far. And so the fact that they, again, in the first half, really struggled to generate a pass rush, I think that, you know, was one of the things that you saw with the inconsistencies that you're waiting for them to overcome. I think the fact that DJ Humphries was really bad in the first half was another thing that we expected him to step up and kind of play a better game this week after he had what was without a doubt an awful game against Danielle Hunter and the Minnesota Vikings. So to see him come out, get a ticky-tack holding penalty on a play, and then to completely whiff on a block on third and one to let the running back get tackled in the backfield, those things felt like, and then you had the AJ Green drop, you know, on third and one. And so those things all felt like, what, you know, are they taking this seriously? You know, are they taking the Jags too lightly? But, you know, we also have to remember the Jags are a professional football team as well.
Yes, they have, and that's the thing. They're a young, winless. So they're a desperate team playing at home against a team that, you know, they're going to play up to that. They're going to play up to this team. And so you have to know that you were going to get perhaps their best shot.
Well, and when you look at it from that perspective, and then you look at the fact that you've got a team in the sense that the Cardinals historically, even under Cliff Kingsbury, at 10 a.m. games are just, you know, they're not great. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you look at the fact that, you know, this team tends to find a way to play down to their opponents, as you mentioned, you know, the New England and Detroit games, for them to come back and really, they dominated the second half. And after that one drive by Jacksonville, I think you look at it, you go, okay, we see where the problems are, or we see the problems were in this game. And the fact that they came up and fixed it, you know, all of a sudden you started to see a lot. I mean, the pick six was all because of the pass rush. You had them under constant pressure in the second half to the point where, you know, James Robinson forced a fumble on Trevor Lawrence because he was trying to pick up a guy that was coming in free. These things are all important, and they dictate the success of the Cardinals. And then, of course, you had the running game really come to life, and Kyler again throwing for a ton of yards. All of those things, you know, I think it just goes to show you that, yes, there were some early struggles, but the outcome of the game was what we expected, and it was a dominant performance in the end.
And ultimately, was it a good win? Absolutely. I liked how they overcame things, and that was kind of the theme. And what we've seen in publications and in articles that have been published about the team is how they overcame some of the issues. How do I feel about the Cardinals right now at 3-0? I am cautiously optimistic. They've taken care of business. They are, if we're going to look at kind of what we were expecting, ahead of schedule because of that win in Tennessee. And now they hit a tough stretch of games right now where I think will prove whether they are a good team or not. They look to me like potentially a good team. But the one thing that I can tell right now is this is a tougher team than in years past, that there was less panic to them, because the previous years, when they fall behind, they tend to make more mistakes. And I think part of that's the maturity of Kyler Murray. I think a part of that is the addition of the guys in the locker room. And it's a more focused team about, hey, we can't forget how good we were last week. Let's do that again and remain focused and not panic. They're not perfect. But honestly, it doesn't look like any team in the NFL right now is perfect. There are some definitely performances that have been very good, but it was a good win, and I feel that the Cardinals are probably a good team, which is kind of what I've thought this team was. It's going to be anywhere from pretty good to really good.
They're playing at an uneven clip, but at the same time, they're doing dominant things offensively. Tied for the number one scoring team in the NFL. I think they're number three or six in yards right now. Like, their offensive production is absurd. And they're efficiently doing it because they're only 15th in plays run, which is where the impressiveness of it stems
but
from.
But the league figured Cliff out, right? In this cheap offense that he was running. And that's it's good to see. Honestly, it's good to see. But let's come back and talk some more about specifically the play of Kyler, the play of the offense. So coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the SR Cardinals web. Let's come back and talk about the play of Kyler Murray, the play of the receivers, where we're getting a ton of production, not from DeAndre Hopkins, and other good stuff. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the play of Kyler Murray. For the first time this season, he was held without a touchdown pass, but he added a rushing touchdown. Would you say that Kyler Murray's game was a good game for Kyler Murray as we look at... And we look at the stats that he had. He had the one interception, which is a little bit on the other side. So he threw over 300 yards, 316 yards, 28 of 34, no touchdowns and interception, and then he added 19 more yards rushing with a rushing touchdown as well. How do you feel about how that game was?
I think he played exceptionally well. He had the interception, but the thing is, you have to remember, and it's one of the things we talk about quite often, is that it all comes down to the ability to score points. And the team right now, being the number one scoring team in the NFL, or tied for the number one scoring team in the NFL, is doing that. So however he's getting them there, that's what matters over, he's only thrown 7 touchdowns. Well, that's a little over 2 a game. So that puts him on pace for
35, 36 game.
Yeah. 35 or 36, which would be
10 better than his career. Yes. That'd be 10 better than last year.
And a franchise record in a single season. So it's little things. Like, people want what they've seen on TV, if that makes sense. And so when they criticize, the touchdowns or this or that, one of the things that they forget about is, like, Patrick Mahomes' fantastic, legendary passing season, he threw, I think it was, 50? Or is it 52? Let's see here. Threw 50, yeah. Since then, he's had fantastic seasons. He's thrown for 26 and 38 touchdowns.
and here's the thing as well, is putting it in context. We won't want 2 or 3 touchdown passes. We've seen that, Kirk Cousins with a second straight week with 3 touchdown passes in a game. Kyler Murray, if he had had 2 touchdown passes on Sunday, would have only become the 3rd quarterback in franchise history to do it 3 straight games to start a year. We're talking a franchise with, over 100 years. Now, granted, a lot of that, but only 3 players have started the year with multiple touchdown passes in the first 3 games. That was Carson Palmer in 2015 and Neil Lomax in 1984. Notice how good a player that Carson Palmer was for the Cardinals. He did that once in his 5 years here.
Yeah, I just don't think people understand how many touchdowns 30 is. And then to, want more than that it's silly. But I get it. It's tough to see other players playing at a high level.
And honestly, from a box score, you hate to see 0-1. 1-1, okay, but you don't like to see 0-1 in the box score.
Right, and so you look at this year, he's having a great year so far. He's number 3 in yards. He's tied for 5th in touchdowns. Like, he played phenomenal, and he's leading, you know, he is leading the top scoring offense in the NFL. So all of those things, you know, matter more than, well, what are, you know, his pure touchdown numbers. And so that's, you know, in basically every statistical category, he is a top seven quarterback right now.
Yeah. And the one thing that if we want to quibble at something is our, and it's not even the quarterbacks throw interceptions, they're not always their fault. However, it's a trend. Three games in a row, he throws an interception in the first possession of the second half, where in the first two games, what that would have allowed them to do is to pull. Now, granted, it didn't really matter against Tennessee, but against Minnesota, they would have needed those points because it would have allowed them, especially after they had gotten that field goal at the end of the first half, it would allow them to, as I like to call it, flip the script, because what they were doing for a while is, you know, Minnesota would get ahead and Arizona would get ahead. And then they finally pulled ahead with that field goal at the end of the half, and being able to turn around to the second half on the first possession to score a touchdown or even some more would add to that. And that would have been the case against Jacksonville as well. Instead of, you know, they throw the interception instead of going down and adding points to kind of answer the kick six. And so it added, gave them a little something to overcome at the second half. And that's something, obviously, Kyler's not going to avoid all interceptions. That he is one to take care of the football. So he doesn't like to throw interceptions, but there is a little bit of gunslinger in him. So you will get, every once in a while, you're going to get a Brett Favre, Carson Palmer type of interception because he trusted the win. And if there's a perfect example with it, it was that interception against Minnesota when he got hit just as he was getting the ball off and he was going to be throwing that into a tight window. He doesn't get touched. That's a touchdown. Instead, it's an interception.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too, and this can kind of go into our conversation about the kick and Matt Prater's, you know, absurdly long 68-yard field goal attempt. And the reality is that one of the things that Cliff has done and that Cliff does exceedingly is trust his players. And he's, to your point about Kyler's gunslinger mentality, a lot of that comes from Cliff and Cliff's, you know, belief in Kyler and Kyler's arm and Kyler's ability to make plays. And so in not a negative way, Kyler is kind of buying into that and saying, okay, I'm going to try to make this throw that nobody can make. I mean, that was a bad decision. It was a dumb decision. But at the same time, you like to see him betting on himself and being aggressive in a way that allows him to take a chance and really put himself in a position to, you know, really break the game open.
And for me, that particular play, and I will say that it was definitely a bad decision by Kyler in terms of making the throw. I believe that he believed that Christian was going to fight more for the ball, because Christian Kirk, when he made that throw, he approached it like he was going to catch, like he was going to basket catch it, like he's going to catch the ball in stride. And if he didn't see the safety, if he did see the safety, which I would imagine he did because he was there, coming from just from the side, he should have played defensive back there at least to go up and contest for that ball. And then at worst, it's a pass breakup. And then you're like, oh, that was not a smart throw. Instead, it was a turnover. So that's the one thing I wish that Kirk would have helped him out more. And I don't want to say that it was a bad game, because we're going to talk about it in a second. No, that Christian Kirk phenomenal. And AJ Green had fantastic games.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, to your point, though, again, when you start to really inspire confidence in these guys and bring out a belief in these guys, what you see is that Kyler's going to take a chance because he trusts his guy so much.
Which is good because you could tell he didn't trust his guys last year on some of those throws.
Right. And so to your point, like you're trusting yourself and your guy to be better than the guys across from them. And I don't know about you, but I don't want him to lose that, that belief or that love and in this team. And instead I would rather him continue to make those aggressive mistakes. The one pick six, you know, the week before against Minnesota, that was just a bad read. Like he missed the guy dropping. It is what it is.
And he thought he threw it more outside. Like
he
recognized the guy was there. And again, that was, hey, I can make that throw. He didn't get it outside enough. He thought he did. And you know, 6 points the other way.
But this one was like, it was like the one last week where he got his helmet, you know, pulled, and or against Minnesota where he got his helmet pulled, where he saw, you know, he thought he was going to be able to fit it in between two guys, and he trusted his guy was going to go up and make a play for him. I don't necessarily know if I want him to stop doing that. And so I would rather him do that than, you know, not take chances or be conservative or be, you know, a check down Charlie type of guy that's afraid to push himself and push his team. So that's, you know, you can say a lot about Cliff's in-game decision making, you can say a lot about Cliff and a lot of different things, but the reality is that's a Cliff thing. That is Cliff instilling in his players an unwavering belief and the reality that they don't have to fear if they try something that they're gonna get pulled out, right? Like that's not something that many coaches do. And, you know, you can say, well, you know, it's going to cost them a game. Absolutely, it's going to cost them a game before. But how do you know you can do something if you don't try it? Or you can't do something if you don't try it? And that's where Kyler and Cliff are. They're trying things because they believe in themselves. And they, you know, Cliff believes in him and he wants to see him succeed and push himself to make plays that nobody else can make.
And talking about the receivers, because, you know, last year what we saw was Hopkins, 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 Hopkins. We haven't seen hardly any Hopkins since the first quarter of the Minnesota game when he scored that touchdown. He really wasn't. I don't think he was targeted after that. And he only had 3 catches for 21 yards against Jacksonville. Now, I will say this. Obviously, he was banged up. He missed practice all week. He was listed with the rib injury. And I never doubted he was going to play. And I thought the fact that, especially with the talent that they have at receiver this year, his presence on the field, if he was able to manage whatever pain he's dealing with, was critical because just having Hopkins on the field is a problem for defenses, and he draws attention even if he's almost a decoy or they're simplifying his route tree because of the injury. He had 3 catches for 21 yards, but you got 7 for 104 for Christian. You had 5 for 112 from AJ, and that was what game when all AJ dropped. He had kind of, if you look at it, he had drops the last 2 weeks, and some of those drops were, one of those drops was just inexcusable. He comes back and you know, big plays down the field. Why don't, you know, that big, like that production that we have, this is something we're not used to seeing in recent years, is that type of production in multiple places.
Yeah. And it's looked, it looks eerily similar to 2015 in that you've got your main guy still, obviously DeAndre's the man, but you have guys in Kirk, Moore, and Green. All three at any point can be a number one that day and really create this dynamic offensive attack. And we talked about it. They did a nice job on Moore horizontally. They did a nice job on Hopkins and, you know, bracketing him. And they dared Christian Kirk and AJ Green to beat them. And
and they did.
And they did. And, you know, yeah, there was no passing touchdowns. But when you're on the goal line and you've got Kyler Murray and James Conner, it's a lot easier just to run the football and not have to worry about it, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that they picked up James Conner, because he is big and can put the ball in the end zone there. And Kyler is always a threat inside the five. Once you get in that red zone, you now, like, even more so, but you had to worry about Kyler Murray and his legs. You definitely do around the end zone. And as was evidenced by the fact is, how did this is now what the 2 weeks in a row where he ends up with there are two road games that at the goal line, he ends up alone. Why? Like, there's no one even contesting him. He basically walks into the end zone.
Yeah, and that's odd to me. You know, the first one I can kind of understand. You bring in Lucky Foto and JJ Watt. Yeah, it's going to create this attention. But when you're just in a power formation with, you know,
you have to account for Murray. Look at the number of touchdowns you've scored.
Right, with nine guys on the line, like, you can designate a safety to be like, hey, it would have been one thing, and maybe I have to go back and look, but I don't think they even had a guy run a route. So that's the thing, is like, it would have been one thing if, like, the tight end came out and, like, ran a quick hook, and that's who, you know, the safety jumped on. But I don't think they even ran a route with anybody. It was just it was just bad defense by the Jaguars. And let's be honest, there's a reason that they're getting ready to set an NFL record for consecutive losses.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about that fateful play at the end of the first half, the 68-yard field goal attempt that ended up being a 109-yard touchdown. Let's discuss whether they should have done it, whether we want to see it again. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and the play. Despite the Cardinals' win, the play that we see over and over and over again on SportsCenter, on all the highlight shows, is Jamal Agnew's 109-yard kick six. The kickoff, the 68-yard field goal attempt that the Cardinals attempted at the end of the first half. He fields at the back of the end zone and takes it the length of the field. You can't have a longer touchdown, because at 110 yards, you're touching the end line, and it's out of bounds, and it's a dead play. You know, you look at the play, and you have to look first. So let's start at the beginning. You have to like that for the second week in a row that with, you know, less than 30 seconds, they're able to move the ball into position for this long field goal. Obviously, Prater got the 62-yarder against Minnesota thanks to Rondale Moore and his speed and elusiveness and headiness to get out of bounds. This time, you know, and Cliff said it the week before, you know, he trusts Prater when they talk about pregame stuff, to go as much, you know, 68 yards, and they went for it, only this time it bit them in the butt. Did you have a problem with the kick, with the decision to kick the 68-yarder the moment they were doing it? Not after the result, but did you have a problem with the kick when it happened?
Yeah. I did, because 68 yards is just so long.
It is a ridiculously long one. And what? So, again, Cliff trusts his players, and he trusts his coaches.
And that's what it is. It comes down to if they're vouching for something, if they're saying, hey, we can do this, it's really hard to step on those feelings. It's really hard to be the coach that goes, no, you can't. Right? Like, why would you want to be that coach?
Well, and then you look at something, because it's end of half, you know, it's the last play of the half. What is the percentage likelihood of what happened happening? It's so small. And right. So
all of that together, I mean, my problem was honestly never about the return. My problem was 68 in Jacksonville is like 72 in Arizona. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was more my problem than anything, is that it's a dense, it tends to be a denser, heavier air. Kicking is going to be affected by that, obviously, and it was. But to your point, and what we've talked about continuously, I would rather that be the way things go down than him kneel on the ball. I would rather him continue to have an unbridled belief in his players, for better or worse, than be conservative and end up wanting to, you know, be a guy that kicks the ball away or you know, just takes a knee and goes into the half. I'll say this, like, if it would have resulted in an injury, like a season-ending injury, I think everybody's tone would be a little different.
I mean, we do have the Justin Pugh injury as part of it. And part of it is simply because of the result of it, which was an absolute fantastic play by Agnew. It was great blocking by Jacksonville. And to the point of, I can't remember what analyst I was talking to, or not talking to, but listening to, is the fact that a field goal unit, usually they don't have guys that are used to
tacklers.
They don't have tacklers on the field. And so you're asking, so perhaps, and it's something you have to react to. So if I think it's simply, if they're in the same situation, obviously, an end of half scenario, I still don't have a problem. Like, I personally, I guess I probably wouldn't want to go past 65. I mean, when your special teams coach said I can do 68, if Prater's saying he can do 68, and honestly, he barely missed it.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. I'm not at all upset with that belief. I want him to continue to be that way, to coach that way. I think that it ends up making this a better team.
Obviously, he's not going to do that in the middle of a quarter because of field position, but at an end of game, like if you need a 68-yard kick, if that's all they get, he's not going to, especially at the end. And the end of half scenario is perfect. You just, you know, can't let him return it for a touchdown. And then otherwise, that is literally the worst case scenario you could possibly have. Because you've tackled anywhere before then it was just a missed field goal and it didn't matter.
Right, and it came up, and that's what makes it worse. I mean, it came to fruition, so, you know, the worst-case scenario happens, and so then you go, well, you know, you shouldn't do that. And it's like, well, yeah, you definitely shouldn't do that. Maybe, like you said, midway through the third quarter.
Oh, definitely not.
If you want to do it when you did it in that situation, I would say this, though. Unless you're in Denver, I would restrict it to dome games.
Yeah, probably. You know, although, what made it worse for me, it wasn't, you know, this was just about the record, is to see him miss it and then to see Justin Tucker beat his record on a game winning, on a game winner at the end of a game where it boops the crossbar and bounces over. What a kick.
And the funny thing is that's, you know, it was in Detroit and all of that stuff. So yeah, it's interesting, but yeah, it was definitely a good test to see kind of how fans react to things. And you saw the overreactions. I thought, you know, I personally wouldn't have done the attempt from there. But you know, the results of the play was really nothing to do with the reason as to why for me.
Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best served Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about injuries that they suffered and concerns as they head into week 4. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. Back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best served Cardinals talk on the web. And perhaps if we look at the injury scenario, the one major concern that we have is that the offensive line unit looks really thin now. Kelvin Beachum didn't play. Justin Murray gets hurt in the first half. Justin Pugh gets hurt on that return. They both miss the rest of the game. They cut Brian Winters, which initially I thought maybe would result in a return, and it was simply because of numbers, because they needed eight guys, and he was out with a personal reason. But based on what Cliff said after the game, it would appear that, you know, things just didn't work out, which is interesting considering he was basically the starter all offseason. Maybe that had something to do with it, the fact that he was upset and was moving, you know, he was maybe it was kind of a Malcolm Butler type thing, unhappy with the role, playing with Josh, who's playing behind Josh Jones. Whatever the reason, thin at guard. Josh Jones plays right tackle. Justin Murray plays guard. They lose both Justin Murray and Justin Pugh. And so they're left with Sean Harlow and Max Garcia finishing the game. How concerned?
I thought they played admirably.
Yeah.
As well in that game.
Can we expect that again this week? I don't, like, we'll have to look at the injury, but that's a part. They're going to be going up against Aaron Donald.
It's completely different at this point because it's Aaron Donald, but I mean, I don't think you're super confident if you have Justin Pugh and Josh Jones or Justin Murray in there, though, right? Like,
it's always a concern. That's true.
And so it's just, it's more of a concern now because you've got backup players, and I know this is the reason they've kept Garcia around, and you know, he's the highest paid backup for a reason. And so for that reason alone, Garcia, I'm fine with. They got to figure something out for Harlow. I don't think you can start Harlow.
Well, hopefully, you know, if there's one thing that we can hope, if Kelvin Beachum is back in the lineup, that will slide Jones over to right guard, and then you're having to worry about the left guard position, and maybe that is Garcia, so that you're only left with one hole rather than two. So if Beachum comes back, that becomes a better scenario. Although,
That was one of the things you and I talked about, though, and we probably would have done the same with DeAndre, is that was a game to hold them out.
It's true.
And so holding Beachum out might have been brilliant in this game, if he's able to go on Sunday, because, you know, that's, to your point, that's a huge difference.
Definitely. And then you look at the fact that they had the injury concerns, both Marco Wilson and Byron Murphy had ankle injuries going into the week, and they played every snap, which is good. Marco's we knew about because he suffered during the game. He, you know, thanks to the world of Twitch and streaming, as of Monday, he said the ankle's good. He said, and he talked about it today on Tuesday. We're recording on Tuesday night. When Marco talked to reporters on Tuesday, he said that he felt soreness and stiffness in his ankle on Monday, but he knew the treatment he was getting, so he was confident all week that he was going to end up playing. The Byron Murphy thing is interesting because it happened just in the middle of the week, and he was fine by the end of the week, and he didn't look hampered at all during the game, and he had the two interceptions and all that's good stuff. But then you bring in, so here's the part that you have questions. Antonio Hamilton has been elevated from the has not just been elevated, has been signed from the practice squad to the active roster. Quentin Dunbar has worked out with the Cardinals and reportedly is signing. When the show drops, we'll know whether it was to the practice squad or the active roster. So you're scratching your head a little bit as to, oh, what's going on?
Yeah, and I think if he's on the active roster, it's something to watch for in terms of injury. I don't know who it is, you know, and we'll just name all three. We'll say, could it be, Byron Murphy with that ankle? Could it be Marco Wilson's ankle? Could it just be Robert Alford? And I don't mean to cut him down in any way, shape, or form. He's played admirably hit through his two games. I just think it's one of those situations where you have to be realistic too, right? Like, He's suffered a lot of injuries.
With him, it's almost like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, because you're like, he made it through the preseason, but Is it going to happen? When's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? Even and that's fair. It's he was banged up with an ankle in 2018, and then 2019 and 2020 he didn't play. So you're like, what's happening? And especially as you go into a week as important like this as this, you hate to be down key players.
Well, let me ask you this, and you know, it's just something to think about. Like we said, this segment's going to be kind of moot once it's dropped, but I think it's still a fun discussion to have. What if the injury to Charles Washington, knowing that he's going to be out at least this week, if not longer, so he's not going to play in the Rams game. He's one of their key special teams guys. What if the injury to Washington has made it so that they want Antonio Hamilton, who they've, you know, signed now to the active roster? What if this ends up being a IR trip? Because it's 3 weeks, right?
Yes.
They can do a three-week IR. So they do a three-week IR of Washington. They bring Hamilton, and they basically tell him now, like, hey, you're going to be one of the main special teams guys. And knowing how they don't really like to double dip in those situations, meaning they don't necessarily like their key special teams guys being utilized on defense unless it's an emergency situation.
AKA they're... what we saw in Minnesota against Minnesota when Hamilton played on defense and actually played a little less on special teams as a result in that second half.
Right. And so what happens if they're bringing in Quentin Dunbar, if they do sign him to the active roster, and then Hamilton is just being used as that?
Could be, basically, as the defensive back. So instead of going with four safeties and four corners active, you're going to have five corners and three safeties active, although that is a little bit of you know, you worry about that for other reasons, with the safety depth. They did protect Chris Banjo and James Wiggins, their seventh-round draft pick. Presumably that maybe James Wiggins will get a shot on special teams this week, because if during preseason and in training camp, he got a lot of work as a gunner, as a punt gunner. And that's kind of the main role. One of the important roles that Charles Washington has is one of the gunners on punts. Antonio Hamilton has been the other one. When Washington went down, they used Antoine Wesley, the back of the roster receiver on the squad, and so it'll be interesting how that goes out. If you look at some of the other guys, so they brought in six players for workouts. They brought in four offensive linemen, all interior guys, and then they brought in two defensive backs. They brought in Quentin Dunbar, and then the other guys was Sherrick McManus, who played the last 9 years for the Chicago Bears, defensive back, but has played almost exclusively special teams. Looking at kind of do you suspect that there will be roster moves or simply practice squad moves overall?
It's hard, man. I really do think that it's a roster move, and they're going to IR Washington. And so then whether they bring Dunbar into the active roster or they leave him on the practice squad, and to your point, they bring up a Banjo or a Wiggins, they're looking at, you know, having options, maybe not this week, but next week and the week after, because this is a massive three-game stretch, man. Like, there's no other way to put it. And so you're going to want to put back or put as many guys into positions to be successful as possible. And I think that's what they're doing here with Dunbar, with bringing in the special teams veteran that's names escaping me that you and I discussed beforehand.
Sure. So,
yeah. So yeah, I think that's the plan right now. We'll see, you know, how it works.
And so let's let's take a look at concerns now. So we now enter week four. Is there anything about the Cardinals' play that raises concerns, in particular as we look at their matchup against the Rams? We'll preview the Rams specifically here in the next segment, but if we look at what the Cardinals have done so far, I think there's really only one thing of concern. Well, it's two. For me, one, it's the inconsistency of the run defense, and two, it's not necessarily the lack of a pass rush, it's the lack of sacks since week one. They are getting pressure, and if you look at some of the pressure numbers, J.J. Watt was in the backfield constantly, Chandler Jones was in there, Marcus Golden, they've all been very good at getting pressures and hits. We just have not seen them finish. And so that's been a little bit concerning because that's kind of what we felt the bread and butter was going to be, especially after week one. But also the inconsistency of the run defense is a little bit of concern.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the biggest concern for me right now is the run defense, because I think, like you said, I'm not a huge pressure guy, but they're creating a lot of pressure. So I think that it's okay. You know, when you look at the overall set, they've got to figure out a way to stop the run more consistently and not put themselves in a position to give up basically, I don't want to say easy, but like not put pressure on offenses, and allowing easy runs is the next three teams are going to exploit that if that happens. Consistently. So I don't know if that's guys being selfish up front and not staying in their lanes. I don't know if that's, I felt like you can see it most when they put Isaiah Simmons on the edge and he's not there to be kind of the athlete that makes those. And I know 3 yards down the field is not the best, but it's still better than the 6 or 7 that we were seeing. So you know, those are definitely the biggest concerns for this team going forward, because the teams are going to play. You got to be able to get pressure and throw their quarterback off, but you also have to be able to stop the run, because these teams won't be like Minnesota or Jacksonville and go away from what's working.
Right. And as you know, granted, the Rams don't have a strong rushing attack. They've been really good at the passing, but it's built off of that in some ways. But you look at San Francisco and you look at Cleveland, those teams, like Kyle Shanahan's offense is built off the run. And if there's one thing we've noticed over the Cardinals against the 49ers over the years, is that they struggle with their particular running scheme. And that is the running scheme of the entire NFC West now. And then you got Cleveland with Nick Chubb, who is a beast of a runner, like unto Derrick Henry. We saw what the Cardinals could be with their run defense, but well, they haven't been that since week one.
Yeah, and I think the bigger concern is that, you know, like you said, the schemes in San Francisco and LA are difficult. The bigger concern going into Cleveland is going to be that they are a team that for 4 quarters will run the football, or tries to run the football, but will run the football because they have Kareem Hunt there as well. So they're able to really wear you down and lean on you for an entire game, unless you're able to do what the Cardinals did against Tennessee, and that's get out in front and force them to throw the football. You know, but it's looking ahead a little bit, and honestly, when you look at it, the first game is the biggest, and they are going to have to address those concerns immediately if they want to be a team that's taken seriously.
Absolutely. Anything else of concern as we look at what the Cardinals are at right now before we move on to talk about the Rams game?
No, I think we covered it with between the injuries, up front on the offensive line, the inability to stop the run, and then, like we talked about, Kyler's propensity for starting the second half with turnovers.
So coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, let's wrap this up by talking about their week four matchup on the road in Los Angeles against the Los Angeles Rams. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals' next matchup is against a team they have not beaten since 2016, the LA Rams, and the other 3-0 team, who is basically the number one team in almost all the power rankings, especially after they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And they did so fairly handily.
Yes, they did. Matthew Stafford is good as advertised. And what I said in the offseason, I believed that the Rams are the team that that I think is the favorite in the NFC. And I will say that I kind of overlooked some of the defensive losses that they suffered. But I thought that the addition of Matthew Stafford would be that much of it, would add that much of an impact to that. And to start first is that what I want to go back to is this, is that the Cardinals are not going against just one streak, but two streaks. Okay. They haven't beaten the LA Rams under Sean McVay. Okay. So the McVay is 8-0 against the Cardinals, whether that's against Bruce Arians, Steve Wilks, or Cliff Kingsbury. The Cardinals also have not beaten Matthew Stafford since 2015. The Cardinals had, well, against the Lions, obviously he was playing with the Lions at the time. There was a stretch when they won like 7 straight games against the Lions. But ever since 2016, starting with 2016, which was the David Johnson injury game, Matthew Stafford has not lost to the Cardinals since 2015. There was obviously the tie in 2019, but they are going against a bit of history. No wins against Stafford since 2015. No wins against the Rams since 2016. Is this the game they do it? And I look at this stretch, the next 3 games, they don't have to beat the Rams, especially that's a big win because it's a conference game on it's a divisional game on the road. They need to come out of these next 3 games 2-1 to legitimately believe that this is a very good team.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. They got to go 2-1 here. They got to put themselves at 5-1 on the season. The problem is they start out with probably the best team in the NFL. You know, LA is, they're not as dominant defensively as they were last year. I think they're missing Brandon Staley a little bit. But when you look at their offense and how efficient and explosive it is, their defense doesn't have to be completely dominant like they were before. And so the Rams game is one of those where you look at it and you go, this is probably going to be a loss for the Arizona Cardinals. There's a couple things that are interesting. I think the first thing that's interesting is that the line opened up Sunday night, you know, when they kind of, or Sunday night, Monday morning, when they dropped those lines, the line opened up at 6.5. There are some sites now where you're getting it at, I think, all the way down to 4.5. I'm double checking right now. Yeah, you're down to 4.5. That's insane to me. To see the line move 2 points that much that quick.
What makes it odd is because the Cardinals are far from what you would call a public team, where the money just comes in. There are teams, the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Packers, the New York teams. Those are public teams where no matter how good or bad they are, they do get money bet on them regularly because they have a long fan base who will bet on them even if they're not any good. So to see that movement means that there's probably a lot of money coming in on the Cardinals side, which means the nation is starting to believe in them. Maybe it's Kyler Murray, maybe it's the 3-0 start, but it feels like that there's a little bit of momentum going in terms of the belief in this team.
Yeah, and so that being said, it's interesting to see that the number is going up as well on the over. So the line started at 6.5 and is, you know, down to 4.5. We're also seeing the line go up to 54.5 on the over, the over under line. I believe it started at 53.5.
Which is interesting because I was looking. I think the Rams have gone, they've hit the over in all three games. The Cardinals, like last year, the Cardinals went under. The Cardinals games went under with the first six games of the season, and this year are 1-2. Even though that they've scored 30 points in every single game, is the fact that they are not giving up the amount of points that one might think.
Yeah, the Cardinals have struggled to cover against the Rams. Last 10, they're 1-8-1. So not only are they, you know, they've struggled against the Rams in the last 10 going 1-9, they tend to not cover those games.
And I believe that like that 1-8-1, I think all those, like you look at the last 8, I think they're 0-8 against the spread again in their last 8 games.
And so when you look at it from that perspective, you know, this is a tough matchup. I think 4.5 shows the respect that they're garnering more than anything, because this is a home game for the Rams. You know, if this was, honestly, you know, the 4.5 feels like if the Cardinals were at home, don't you kind of think?
Like, yeah, really.
It is surprising to see that they're all the way up to 4.5. Now the money's shifting back to LA, so we're probably going to see it settle at 5.5, I'm going to guess. And that sounds about right. I think we as Cardinals fans obviously want to see them just straight up win the game. That would be absolutely fantastic. I think we as Cardinals fans for so long and realistic football fans go, and not from a gambling perspective, but you say, hey, if you cover the, let's just say it gets to 5.5, if you lose by 5 points or less, and it's a competitive game and not something where you score something late, like we talked about with Jacksonville last week, but it's a competitive game where, you know, they win by a last second field goal or, you know, they stop you on the final drive going down and take the lead, I think you can live with a loss in that direction. If you get boat raced or you're completely inefficient offensively again against this team, that's where concerns begin to mount. This is a tall test for the Cardinals. I think the Rams are going to allow, and when I say it, I don't mean allow as in, you know, not play hard, but similar to what we saw the Cardinals do with the Jaguars. They're going to come in, they're coming off an emotional high victory where they really physically dominated the reigning Super Bowl champions. And I think you're going to see the Cardinals come out and be able to maybe not impose their will, but they're going to make it a really good game and show that they belong in the same, you know, discussion as the Rams when it just comes to ability and where they're at in terms of, you know, getting to being one of the top NFC teams, not one of the top NFC West teams, one of the top NFC teams. And yes, those might be the same things, but I think this is a game where you see the Rams just their defense is a little more intact and their stars on offense are a little more veteran and they're able to win a close game. I think they walk away with a 35-31 win.
And that seems fair, but we look at this Rams defense statistically. They're allowing 300, so they're middle of the pack right now in terms of yards allowed at 374 yards a game, and I know part of that's in due to the fact that Tampa Bay's offense is incredible right now and they gave up a ton of yards to them. But they're only they're still giving up 20 over 20 points a game, which, yeah, that's not like that's not what they were a year ago by any means. And so a Cardinals offense that is better than it has been against a Rams defense that hasn't, that wasn't as good, that isn't as good as it was last year or as dominant. They still have dominant pieces to it, but the Cardinals should be able to do some things. And it's also in the passing game that you can see that. Now the trick is to what the Cardinals can do defensively, because the Rams they're great, but they're not great in the run. That's the part that they don't have a great running game right now. They are in the bottom six. They average 83 rushing yards a game. Obviously when they lost Cam Akers, that was an issue for them. They've got Sony Michel now, they've got Daryl Henderson. And so while their run game is tricky, they don't rely on it. So if the Cardinals can take that run game away early, they will be able to do more in the pass. And their passing scheme is going to be tough because they do have such great receivers on their team. You've got the speed aspect with DeSean Jackson again. You've got Cooper Kupp, who's doing more work down the field, and Robert Woods, who is one of the more understated great receivers in this league. And so the Cardinals defense is going to be tested again. I think very similar to how they were tested against Minnesota. The difference being Minnesota has a much better running back, while the Rams have the better quarterback. And so I don't know what to think of this game, but as long as this game... So the Rams, a Rams win doesn't really change anything for them. Everyone believes the Rams are the best team in the NFC, the best team arguably in the NFL right now. And beating the Cardinals would be par for the course. Cardinals, though, beating the Rams, like you said, would put them in the conversation as an early contender and would really make a statement... would really make a statement for the team, and I believe in terms of belief moving forward, because then you come home against San Francisco, then you go on the road to Cleveland. And in terms of how things work in playoff season, it's much more palatable to lose to a Browns team than a Rams team, because it doesn't affect any sort of tiebreakers. So I really am super intrigued, worried, excited about this matchup, simply because I don't want the balloon to burst. We feel the Cardinals making momentum. They make a surprise win in week one. They overcome things in week two and week three. Week two is almost a lucky win. Week three, they overcome things to beat a bad team. And so you feel the momentum going, the bubble going bigger, the balloon growing in terms of what this team is. If they're going to get manhandled by the Rams, I think it bursts the bubble and puts them back to, well, they might be a good team, but they can't compete in the division with this Rams team. This might be the week that the Cardinals don't crack 30 points. I think it'll be close. If I had to make a prediction, I'm saying it's going to be Rams 27-24, but I like how this game plays out. There's just a little worry about will they be able to come out with the physicality that they need against this Rams team?
Yeah, and that's the main thing. They've got to come out and play from the start. They can't get down early, especially like they did against Minnesota, but even like they did against Jacksonville. The other thing is they can't have a costly mistake. As much as we're okay with the kick six, you can't do that, or a pick
not
six against
the Rams.
Yeah, against the Rams, because you can't allow anybody else to score points, because we know for a fact that their offense is going to score points.
Yes, yeah, so you can't let the defense score, you can't let special teams score. It's got to be offense only.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a high scoring game. I think it's going to be a fun game. I think we're going to talk about this game next week. And you and I are going to be extremely positive about a loss and feel like that they're really close to being a contender for the NFC. You know, I still am always going to buy Tampa over everybody else, but I think if you go in and you play a close game and you have a chance to beat LA, even if you don't come out on top, you're there, and you basically say, hey, come December when you play them at home, that's when you get your first win against them in six decades, it feels like, at this point.
Well, and later that year, that could also be a scenario where it factors in for the division at that point too.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, prove us right, prove us that you're right there and you are good enough, because as much
steal
as
this
we,
game though, steal this game, and I think everyone believes in this Cardinals team.
Right. But that's what I said. I think you and I are buying in, and if they lose a close one where a nail biter, we're still bought in at
yes,
that point.
Absolutely.
Don't get run off the field. Don't look like you don't belong. At least make yourself look like an actual contender. I mean, if they lose better than Tampa did, I think everybody's gonna be like, maybe they're the guys that are, maybe they can compete, and when they get their next shot, they're going to hit it. And so that's to me what matters.
Absolutely. And like, if they lose this one, they've got to beat San Francisco. That there's no matter what, they have to, it's a home game in the division. They've got to win that game. And then it comes down to, if they win this game, they can afford a loss in Cleveland. I think they kind of will momentum their way through, because this is kind of feeling more and more. You're kind of getting the feeling like 2015. I'm not going to say it's like 2012. 2012 was a different animal, where they lost their quarterback and they lost their left tackle. They started out 4-0 and finished 5-12. This is definitely not that team. But how much like 2015 is this team? You know, they're 3-0. If they pick up a win, this is a big win this weekend if they get it. Can I predict that win? No. But if they're competitive, like we said, this can be an acceptable loss as long as they build on it in the next weeks. If they finish 2-1, no matter how that happens, if they finish 2-1 in the next 2 weeks and are 5-1, I think everyone still believes in this team. If they go to 5-0 or 6-0, Then I really think that the hype train will be real. Right now, I think everyone is cautiously optimistic. They're excited. Locally, there's still a lot of people that don't believe in Cliff Kingsbury. I think at this point, you know, guys, his offensive system works. You got the talent there, and they're humming. So this will be a premier game. You know, I fear the beat down, but I don't think that's going to happen this year, because this year, this team is tougher. This team is tougher than in previous years.
Yep, I agree with you, and I'm excited to see how it turns out.
All right, with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Hopefully when we talk next week, we'll be talking about a very positive scenario, a team that's getting healthier, a team that's got a win. But if not, we like where the Cardinals are going in this scenario. We'll be back again next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Secret Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.